The conflict between Russia and Ukraine has political implications for governments worldwide, but the conflict also impacts the culture and identity of Russians and Ukrainians everywhere. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The International Academy for Russian Music, Arts, and Culture hosts a guitar festival every year. This year, it's dedicated to Ukraine and features musicians with Ukrainian roots. We'll have a studio full of gifted musicians today. Then later in the hour, John Locke is on a mission to revive the study of Midwestern history. I'll talk with him about the need he sees and what he's trying to accomplish. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we'll talk about Midwestern history and culture with historian John Locke. But first, we'll start with the culture and history of Russia and Ukraine. While news reports are focusing on the standoff between the two countries and the violence, we're going to focus today on music. The International Academy for Russian Music, Arts, and Culture hosts a guitar festival every year in Iowa City and Cedar Rapids. This year, it's dedicated to Ukraine and features musicians with Ukrainian roots. The festival begins today, runs through Sunday with a major concert on Saturday at CSPS in Cedar Rapids and a major concert on Sunday at the Englert Theater in Iowa City. With me in the studio right now is Oleg Timofeev. Hello, Oleg.
Hello, Charity. Thank you for inviting us.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. Roman Turovsky is also here. Hello, Roman.
Yes, hello, Charity.
And Taras Kompanichenko.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for being here today. And Oleg, let's start with you. You're the artistic director for the organization. First, tell me a little bit about the focus of the International Academy for Russian Music, Arts, and Culture. What is your mission?
Well, you know, the International Academy for Russian Music, Arts, and Culture, YARMAK, exists or has been active in Iowa since 2004. And I can say that we kind of evolved. Meaning that originally we thought that we'll be bringing all kind of artists, you know, we'll have exhibitions, we'll have actors. We had great, gigantic plans, but more and more it was becoming an organization focusing on the revival of the Russian guitar. And that sounds maybe a little small, but actually that's the only place in the world, the only organization in the world that actually does it. The Russian guitar, I mean, I don't know if Iowans need to hear it because I've been doing it for quite a while, but the Russian guitar tradition goes back to the time of Catherine the Great, and it was pretty much, you know, it faded out throughout the 20th century, and it is almost forgotten even in Russia itself. So Iowa City is the mecca of the Russian guitar.
All right, well, tell us about the Russian guitar. What makes it special?
I can talk forever about on this particular subject, but basically the main thing is it has seven strings, and those seven strings are tuned to the sounds of a major chord. And there are many instruments that are tuned to a chord. For example, American banjo, first strings are exactly the same pitches, but in the most standard tuning. But the Russian guitar always tuned like that, never has any variations of the tuning. And the only variation that there is, sometimes it has additional strings. So the guitar that I have actually in my hands has two necks, and the second neck has some extra basses.
All right. More strings.
Yeah, it has, honestly, there's 12 strings, but we call it seven-string guitar because on the main neck, there are only seven. The number seven is very important, I guess, in Slavic cultures. So, people often ask me, so what's the extra string? Well, we don't have an extra string. We say, like, what string is your guitar missing?
Now, when you play with a Russian guitar, what do you think that gives you an opportunity to do that you can't do with the kind of guitar that we're most used to?
Well, there are many technical issues. The main thing, of course, is the difference in the repertoire. And it has different history, different music written for it. But the first people who actually started the guitar, they were not Russian. They were Polish and Czechs, Bohemian. And the person who made more for the guitar than anybody for the Russian guitar was Andrei Sikora. And he was originally a harpist. And, you know, what really interests me right now is the soundscape of the late 18th century, what kind of music people were listening to. And I think the people were listening to a lot of Ukrainian music because Russian court was very Ukrainian in the 18th century. And there were many bandura players. I mean, I'm sure we will talk about it later. And they have a lot of open strings. And in addition, there was an instrument called gusli, which was a psaltarium-like instrument, which also with a lot of ringing strings. And, of course, huge aristocratic fashion for harp. So out of those acoustical phenomena, out of those interesting sounding kind of open strings, grew the Russian guitar, led by the person whose first instrument was actually harp. So therefore, it sounds more like a harp than the six-string guitar. It's not quite as dry as we Russian guitar players would say.
All right, and Taras is sitting next to you, and he has a very different-looking instrument in his lap. And Roman, maybe you can tell me about that instrument.
Yes, Taras's instrument is a traditional Ukrainian kobza, which is an instrument from a lute family. The lute family, it has six strings on the neck with frets, which is quite familiar to many people. But it also has some additional strings, which are not basses, but they're additional treble strings above the thinnest string on his instrument, which are also played the harp way. And also, besides that, it also has some sympathetic consonants coming from them.
All right, and so is this from the same family as the Russian guitar?
Not quite, but there is a very strong possibility that the Russian guitar has inherited some traits from the kobza in its natural evolution.
All right.
Throughout the 18th century.
And Oleg, tell me why, with this year's festival, you decided to focus on Ukraine.
Well, Ukraine, of course, is on the minds of many people today. I taught a course at the University of Iowa called Ukraine, a Country at the Crossroads, when I learned myself a lot about the history of this amazing country. Also, in recent years, 2009, 2011, I had Fulbright Fellowship, and my whole family lived in Ukraine, in Kyiv, Ukraine, for a year and a half. And I discovered Ukraine in the best possible way. I met incredibly interesting people, such as Taras Kompenichenko, a real bard of Ukraine. I wanted to share it with my friends here. I mean, I can add to that because of the political events, you know, the society, you know, the Russian-speaking communities are very polarized today, and I just want to bring them beauty and to show them what, you know, how beautifully can we make music together.
Well, and Roman, maybe you can tell me a little bit. You live in New York now, but you're originally from Kyiv.
From Kyiv, that's correct.
And tell me a little bit about, I mean, obviously Ukraine and so many countries that were part of what was once known as the Soviet Union. Identity is an incredibly important and difficult part of life there.
Yes.
So tell me what it means to be Ukrainian.
that's a very, very interesting question. I think one of the main things about our country is that we are all born with a very large historical sense, because it's the land that has suffered a great deal over the centuries. It has been depopulated at least three times in the course of last 1,000 years. It also produced some of the most amazing musical culture that I know of, which is also happened to be the best documented. The Ukrainian musical culture was discovered in the 19th century by the ethnomusicological community, and it produced a large number of books and even recordings of the last remaining blind wandering singers in the 19th century.
So the culture was well documented. Did it continue to be alive?
Unfortunately, not. The Soviet-era repressions pretty much put the end to that culture. But there were several enthusiasts that carried it on. There were a few traditional singers have survived, and they had students. Our friend Taras was a student of one of these students.
And thanks to him, this culture is going on.
So it's been passed down to the few who sought it out.
Yes.
And were interested. Do you see a revival happening today as Ukrainian pride has grown?
Absolutely. Partially thanks to Taras and partially thanks to his Western Hemisphere equivalent, Julian Kitasty, who played here yesterday. The Ukrainian culture is becoming very well known in the world. About a year ago, many people who have not been aware of the existence of Ukraine are now aware, in fact. And Ukraine has great many more friends than we ever imagined it.
Before we get to the break, I would love for Taras, could you play something for us so we can become acquainted with this Ukrainian music that we're talking about?
I don't know. Maybe this song, very interesting. This song from 18th century. That's this after this song, famous Ukrainian philosopher Grigory Skovoroda. He wrote music, melody, and text. Meditation.
Стоїть явор над горою, все киває головою, буйні вітри повівають руки явору ламають, буйні вітри повівають руки явору ламають, а вербечки шумлять низько, волокуть мене до сна. Тут тече поточек близько, видно воду аж до дна.
We're listening to the music of Taras Kampanichenko from Ukraine. We'll talk more about Russian and Ukrainian music in just a moment. I'm talking with members of the International Academy for Russian Music, Arts, and Culture. They're hosting their guitar festival this week. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up a little bit later in the hour, we're going to talk about Midwestern history and culture, but right now we're focusing on Russian and Ukrainian history and culture. With me are members of the International Academy for Russian Music, Arts, and Culture. They host a guitar festival every year in Iowa City and Cedar Rapids. It's starting today, happening this week. It culminates in a major concert, the Grand Gala event, Saturday, March 14th in Cedar Rapids at 8 p.m. at CSPS. And then Sunday, March 15th, the same concert at the Englert Theater in Iowa City at 7 p.m. With me is Oleg Timofeyev. He is the artistic director for the organization. And he's brought in some very special guests. Roman Turovsky from New York is here. He's originally from Kiev in Ukraine. He's a well-known painter and a lover of Ukrainian music. Taras Kampanichenko is here also from Ukraine. He was performing for us just before the break. And Oleg, I want to return to you. In putting together this celebration of Ukrainian music this year, how did you go about looking for performers? Who were you looking for?
Well, that was relatively easy, actually, because we lived in Ukraine for a year and a half, and Taras and Danila Pertsev, the other Ukrainian musician whom we brought, at this time, we actually had several projects together, participated in several festivals, and, you know, are basically bound for life. But the thing about the Russian guitar is that, you know, it should be understood that, you know, there are instruments that for some reason have nationality attached to them, such as French horn. You know, we don't necessarily, it's not like you have to play French music on French horn. English horn as well. I mean, there is an instrument called Russian bassoon. I'm not completely sure what it is. So when the seven-string guitar with this idiosyncratic tuning appeared in Russia, it wasn't called Russian guitar. Composers were Ukrainian, Polish, Czech. They were sometimes a piece called Air Russe would appear. And the guitar was called Guitar à sept cordes in French. And there were many Ukrainian composers who wrote for it. And what my friends brought for me from Kyiv, it was kind of a gift. I mean, the gift part was that they actually transported this. I mean, I bought it on some eBay-like forum. But it's a guitar made in Kyiv in 1909. Beautiful seven-string guitar. Excellent guitar that shows that in Kyiv, at the beginning of the 20th century, there was a circle of people who played this guitar. And the great Ukrainian poet and probably the most important cultural figure today, Taras Grigorievich Shevchenko, also played seven-string guitar. So it's just as much a Ukrainian instrument in a way. And the fact that it's related to Kobza that Taras played, I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer in a way to bring those people here.
Nice. Well, and we heard the Kobza a little while ago. Could you play something for us on the Russian guitar?
Yeah, I'll play a piece by Vasily Sarenko, who was a Ukrainian composer, but he wrote for this instrument. He spent most of his life in St. Petersburg, and he was a medical doctor by profession. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. That's Oleg Timofeyev. He is the artistic director for the International Academy for Russian Music, Arts, and Culture. They're hosting their guitar festival this week, starting today, and it culminates in a major gala event Saturday at the CSPS in Cedar Rapids and Sunday at the Englert Theater in Iowa City. You can find out more information on their website. It's iarmac.net. You can also follow the link on our Twitter feed, at IPR Talk. And Roman, I'd love to ask you, we were talking about how the music, the Ukrainian music, survived during all of those years of Soviet oppression. And earlier, Oleg, you mentioned, you know, the Russian-speaking world. And of course, people in Ukraine speak Russian, but also they have their own language, Ukrainian. Was there an effort during all of those years to keep Ukrainian culture, the language and the culture, alive?
Of course. There was always a pressure from the empire to lose the language. But thanks to the effort of Taras Shevchenko, the great national poet, who gave a great impulse to the preservation of language, and thanks to him, it became a literary one. There is a large evolutionary line of poets and writers that came from him, and it's to their credit that the culture and the language have survived and progressed and evolved and developed. There was several periods of Russification, but people have preserved the language, and it sort of had the same fate as the Catalan language had in Spain. But its beauties are so great that even those of us who speak Russian fluently and natively, we still love Ukrainian so much that there's no way we could give it up.
Was it something you had the opportunity to learn when you were growing up?
Yes, Ukrainian was taught as a second language from second grade on, but in the course of my school years, the number of schools that were teaching Ukrainian was reduced by about 90% in the capital city of Ukraine.
Wow. Did you speak it in your home?
Yes. My family had always been bilingual, although most of the time we spoke Russian. But in my family, we always had the great respect for the language, and we always read Ukrainian books. And
how long have you been in the United States?
35 years.
In New York, of course, there are people from all over the world, so I'm sure that there are many Ukrainians also in New York. Do you have a community? Do you try to connect with each other?
Of course. There are several magnet organizations. One is the Ukrainian Museum, which is in downtown Manhattan, which has wonderful exhibitions and has a very nice concert series in which I participate occasionally with my friend Julian Katasti. There's also Ukrainian Institute, which is situated catty corner from the Metropolitan Museum in a beautiful neo-Gothic mansion. And it has a concert series, and it has a wonderful visual art exhibit series as well. And, of course, there are Ukrainian restaurants, and there are Ukrainian churches and schools and sausage stores and and bakeries.
Now, as an expatriate, do you sometimes feel as if there was more focus outside of Ukraine on preserving the culture than inside?
Yes and no. There are some things in Ukrainian culture that have only survived in diaspora. And we're thankful for those things, because we are able to bring some of those songs back to Ukraine.
When people go to this guitar festival and they experience this music, and there will be so many different opportunities to experience the music. I mean, this evening with the grand opening, the music of Ukrainian Jews, and then tomorrow, Ukrainian composers for the seven-string guitar, and then, you know, it's all these different opportunities to hear this kind of music. What do you hope people take away from this experience?
Well, it's large and simple. I think that poetry, particularly in art in general, is our anthropological goal. And I think in presence of those things, all shallow things would fall away, such as violence and hatred.
Oleg, what do you want people to take away from this experience?
Well, we want to bring the richness and the excitement of Slavic cultures to Iowa audiences. And I have to say that Iowa audiences, American audiences in general, are extremely, you know, audience of very high quality, very open-minded. You know, I spent a year in Germany, for example, and it was very difficult to sell my art as a Russian guitarist because, you know, people never heard of the Russian guitar and they're suspicious. And, you know, I showed it to a German professor in Musikhochschule Freiburg, and she looked at it, was a real guitarist, and then she said, can it be also tuned the normal way? And the audiences here just know, can, you know, see what is beautiful and what isn't. And I'm sure that they will appreciate the art of Julian Kitasty, Danila Pertsev, Taras Kompenichenko. In addition to that Ukrainian line, we also have an excellent Russian Romani or Gypsy performer, Vadim Kolpakov, a great American lutenist and seven-string guitarist now, John Schneiderman, a guest from Sweden, Stefan Wester. So we have really a great selection of artists of very high quality.
And as we watch the news, I mean, so many of us are concerned about what's going on in Ukraine right now, and of course what it means for the rest of Europe and what it means for the rest of the United States. When we listen to the music, do you want that to inform also how we think about what's happening politically?
Of course, because if a country that produces such a great culture, I think we'll do well overall in this world.
Well, before we run out of time, and we are nearly done, but Taras, I would love for you to perform something else for us on the Kobza.
It's maybe a scene about до Богородиці, може до Богородиці.
A chant to the Virgin.
Okay.
Роже слічна я, діво чиста я, так вдячне пахнуча я. Подай нам руку, не дай нам муку, матко милосердна. Подай нам руку, не дай нам муку, матко милосердна. Біла лелія, Діво Марія, так вдячне пахнуча я. Подай нам руку, не дай нам муку, матко милосердна. Подай нам руку, не дай нам муку, матко милосердна. Руно златоє в небо взятоє, одесную посажденоє. Подай нам руку, не дай нам муку, матко милосердна. Подай нам руку, не дай нам муку, матко милосердна. Покри нас покровом своїм, о мохвором, визволь нас із неволі. Подай нам руку, не дай нам муку, матко милосердна. Подай нам руку, не дай нам муку, матко милосердна. Подай нам обід.
Listening to the music of Taras Kompenichenko from Ukraine, We're talking about the Russian Guitar Festival, an annual event in Iowa City and Cedar Rapids. It begins this evening and runs through Sunday. It culminates in a grand gala concert Saturday at CSPS in Cedar Rapids and Sunday at the Englert Theater in Iowa City at 7 p.m. With me also, Oleg Timofeev. He is the artistic director for the organization, and also Roman Turovsky from New York. Thank you all.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.